Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Pittsburgh Steelers cornerback, Trey Johnson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast presented by the 2019 Legends of Pittsburgh Crews. Folks, you probably didn't know about this, but some of the athletes and celebrities that are here that are going to be on the cruise, the Legends Cruise, how did they fare in a potato sack race? I bet you never asked that because, you know what? If you wanted to compete with one of these guys in a potato sack race, you could. So if you want to leave the cold behind, it hadn't been too cold for Christmas, but you know the cold's coming. It's right around the corner, and you could do better things like be on the Legends of Pittsburgh Cruise. Book now, legendsofpittsburghcruise.com. Call 877-381-5553. Use the promo code SCU19, and if you'd like even more information, you can visit that website or our website at steelcityunderground.com/legendscruise. My name is Joe Kuzma, and it's week 17. It's the final week for most teams for football. We're hoping, at least the regular season that is. You wait all year round, and now all of a sudden football's just about done. It's a sad time. Hopefully we're not too done, though, but there is one more game to cover, and that usually means it's our little time of the week, the little bookend we call Trey's Corner with Pittsburgh Steelers cornerback Trey Johnson. Trey, how would you fare in a potato sack race?
Honestly, I think I'd do pretty good, and I did one when I was younger, and I actually won the little trophy that they gave us. I think I got like a lua or something like that at the hotel. So I'm the reigning champ in my eyes. So,
oh, that's something. You know what? We might have to take you up on that challenge at some point. I thought that was pretty interesting when I'm seeing this. The folks with the Legends Cruise give us all kind of tidbits to use week in and week out, and when that one came across the wire, I'm like, that would be kind of interesting. Now I wonder, like, if the boat, like, if there's like some sensation with it. You know, some people get that seasick or they feel the motion. You know, that might throw you off, man. Might give somebody an unfair advantage. So I know some of us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I really don't mess with like smaller boats like that. I can attest because I've gotten seasick on a small boat in the rough waves. You know, I went deep sea fishing. We went about like, you know, like an hour boat ride, and those waves were real choppy in the ocean. So seasickness is definitely real, people. Make sure if you've never been out there, take some water, you know, and get prepared.
You know what? There's a boat that goes up and down the Three Rivers. There's a whole fleet of them, actually, the Gateway Clipper. And they had a beer tasting, like a craft beer type deal, a couple of years ago. My wife got me a ticket, took me for my birthday. It was like in October. It was fall themed. And I don't know necessarily that the craft beer, along with being on the water, was necessarily the best idea at times. But it wasn't too it wasn't too bad. Waters usually don't get too bad on the river. But, you know, if you're real sensitive to that type of stuff, I'm real sensitive. I was about to say before you were talking about that, some other things that made us sick, and I'm sure inquiring minds want to know. I don't know if you know what pass interference is. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that do these days, but I wanted to kind of get your opinion on. Sometimes, I don't know the best way to go about this. I mean, there's definitely, what would you consider flagrant pass interference, and when would you consider where the refs are really kind of nitpicking at something?
I think that, you know, the flagrant pass interference is like if you see a jersey tug or like an obvious push, you know, something like that. But, or if the, you know, a lot of refs, I've talked to a lot of refs, and they usually say if the DB doesn't turn his head, you know, it's usually pass interference. So, like, just kind of the idea of getting your head around. But, like, outside of that, I feel like if, you know, as a defender, if you're able to get your head around and, you know, make a play on the ball, I feel like it's not pass interference, you know, as long as you – if you're making a play on the ball, it shouldn't be pass interference, you know. I mean, but it all depends on the ref. It depends on how they see it, what angle they're looking at. You know, so many different things that go into it to where – completely out of our control. You know, it's all on the ref.
Oh, yeah. You said the important thing there, which is angle, which I could attest to. Speed of play along with any angle. From one angle, it could look like nothing. From one angle, it could look like something. And unfortunately, with all these TV angles and the way things are set up, you can't challenge those type of penalties as not being a penalty in the case of a couple of them that happened with the Steelers. And I don't want to bemoan all of this because myself and Brian spoke ad nauseum to all of the calls that happened in the Saints game, and a lot of people were like, hey, you know what? It's like, apparently some didn't listen to the entire show because we didn't blame all officiating, but definitely a factor when you factor in all the other things, it's tough to overcome all of them as an entirety. I mean, yeah, short of grabbing someone's arm, you said getting your head around, of course, part of the mentality there is that in the eyes of the referee, you're thinking, is this defensive back playing, or defender in general, because it would be a linebacker, of course, too, in coverage. Are they playing the man, or are they playing the ball or the play? You know what I mean? And obviously, if you tackle somebody before the ball gets there, or obviously maybe not getting your head around and just watching the player, a little harder to sell whether or not that defender is actually just trying to do their job. But in my opinion, I think the rules greatly favor offense, and they have for quite a while. And it's unfortunate. I'm sure you were maybe as upset with some of those calls, especially this being your specialty, as a lot of us were sitting at home watching too on Sunday.
Yeah, I definitely was. And you kind of just said something real in particular right there that usually goes the offense's way. You know, I feel like offensive pass interference is definitely overlooked. Like, it's really rarely ever called. And, you know, I feel like it's something that happens pretty much every play. You know, a lot of times we, you know, the defender is, you know, supposedly doing pass interference, you know, because of the fact that they got pushed off by the receiver, or the receiver pushed off at the top of the route, or whatever it is that the receiver did, you know, to kind of throw you off. You're just trying to make up for what happened. But like they always say, the second guy always gets caught. So I guess that's why it's defensive pass interference most of the time.
Yeah, it's always the retaliation, and usually not the guy committing the original, what do you want to say, infraction that always sometimes gets caught there. It's usually the second guy. And, you know, that you see that a lot of times where somebody does something in a pile and then somebody gets up and shoves the other person, and the guy who retaliates by shoving, saying, hey, you can't do that. What are you doing? Kind of almost vigilante justice in a way. And then, you know, the referees have only catch the second half of that, and they feel obligated to uphold the law, and they're working with what they saw. And unfortunately, that's still a big part of the game, is what they saw versus, you know, what you got all these eyes in the sky and everything else. Yeah. And well, Trey, we can't at this point change what happened on Sunday. Steelers with a loss to the Saints and falling behind marginally by part of having an 8-6-1 record. Now, one other thing hangs in the balance, and then there's like a real like outlier that could happen that probably won't, where they need some things to fall into place in order for them to make the postseason. The one thing in their favor, I guess, is usually they're facing the Cleveland Browns in week 17. This has been like the common occurrence for many seasons since the NFL aligned a lot of these divisional games up at the end of the year. What they wanted to do was, they not only wanted to make the games interesting, but it also had a lot to do with standings. And myself and Brian, before the season even started, had said something to the effect of, this game could determine the AFC North, kind of an AFC North championship. Well, in a way, yes. If the Steelers win and the Baltimore Ravens lose to the Cleveland Browns, it will determine the AFC North championship. However, there's a lot of weight in the other game as well. The Steelers obviously have to take care of business, beat the Bengals, and it might be where they're a little luckier, because the Bengals are down on their luck. A lot of injuries on their side that we're going to cover here in a second. Part of the reason why they fell to a 6-9 record, which our buddy the professor Zach Meckler is a little immature. He would be giggling at that right now, as far as the Bengals record. But and I outed him totally on that. I don't know if that's a public joke for anything, but now everybody knows, and the more you know, as they say. So I guess the fortunate thing in the roundabout way that's odd is usually it's the Steelers able to rest a lot of their starters when they play a lowly and pretty much winless Browns team at the end of the season. However, this is a very much resurgent Cleveland Browns squad with Baker Mayfield just, I guess, getting a lot of headlines. There's something interesting to tell you from a player's perspective. How much you really think he's doing anything too unprofessional, or people, we talk about nitpicking. There's some tension there with him and Hugh Jackson. Ever since Hugh Jackson has been hired by the Bengals, it seems like their ship is sinking. But, you know, is it people making a little too much out of, like, some smack talk? I mean, that's part of the game, is it not? Like, people, you know, bragging and being competitive?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a part of the game. And it's especially a part of Baker Mayfield's game. You know, that's something that they people were even, you know, when he was getting drafted or whatever, they were talking about in the draft process of how, you know, some coaches didn't like him because of his attitude and the way that he is. But, you know, that's him, and that's just the way that he portrays himself, and that's the way that he is. And, you know, it's definitely a part of the game. So I don't see it as that big of a deal. You know, I feel like he's honest. He's just being an honest individual. You know, he got asked a question, he gave him an answer, and, you know, that really is what it is, you know. But it's evident in his play, you know, so I feel like what he's saying is true because they're going out there and they're starting to win, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, I mean, the Browns, they're doing a little better recently than the Steelers have. The Steelers have lost four of their last five, and like I said, the season just kind of sliding away in a very uncharacteristic manner. Won't get into talking about coaching or anything to that matter. I think a lot of it lies with the players play the game, and obviously I don't want to talk about anything with coaching, changing of staff, changing a team, or anything like that, because guess what, folks? If the season's over after this Sunday, we'll have an entirety to talk about that through 2019. So the task at hand, and one thing that I asked before we jump directly to the Steelers and Bengals, because the Steelers are something like 14 or 14.5 point favorites in this game, and that'll scare some people because some people really put a lot of faith into the Vegas odds makers, and, you know, with some weird tinfoil hat wearing kind of conspiracy theories that we all have with money on the line. Some of these games end up closer or right on the money as the money would have it. However, one thing to keep in mind here is that in order for the Steelers to make the postseason, they must become Cleveland Browns fans for at least one day. And even Antonio Brown tweeted, he added an S to the back of three different jerseys, tweeted it out. It says Browns. For his last name, he put an S on it, which instead of saying Brown, it says Browns. But the 7-7-1 Cleveland Browns, who I felt would be improved this year, I had them as a plus or minus five in the win category, and they've already exceeded that. I need them to exceed that just a little bit more. Winners of five of their last six, beating teams such as the Falcons. They beat up on the Bengals twice. Unfortunately, beat a team the Steelers couldn't, the Denver Broncos, Carolina Panthers, and their one loss coming at the Houston Texans. But they have to go on the road. They have to face a Baltimore Ravens team who is currently in the driver's seat. They control their own destiny at 9-6. They are number one in the division. They have a tough defense, but they also have a rookie quarterback as well. And a lot of moving parts on their offense. And just kind of without us going into making this a Baltimore versus Cleveland preview, how do you feel about the Browns' chances on Sunday? Should Steelers fans just freak out and throw in the terrible towel? Or do you think, hey, you know what, pull up your app, or if you have the ability on the Sunday ticket, flip over and in between commercial breaks and check out that other game?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's definitely a possibility. You know, stranger things have happened, you know, like I said before the show. And the, you know, like I always say, you know, in previous shows, momentum is something that's ridiculous. And the Browns is a team that has momentum heavy right now. And, they, you know, they're definitely on the up and up. And, you know, of course, the Ravens are a good football team. But, you know, anybody can be beaten, you know, any given Sunday, you know. So it's definitely a possibility for the Browns to go out there and beat the Ravens. And either way, I know it's going to be a good game and a close game. But I feel like the Browns could definitely pull it out. And that's what I hope happens, because I know we can go out there and beat the Bengals. So.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the deal, you know, the Browns, I feel like they can hold down their part.
Yeah, I think in order for Cleveland to have a real shot, the offense has got to click. The Ravens' defense, I won't say they're not without their faults, but they've been good. But you look at some of the teams they played, Chargers laid an egg, obviously, for anyone who watched on Sunday, last Saturday night. Shot themselves in the foot a little bit. But before that, it was like, you know, Tampa Bay. There was a shootout with the Chiefs that went to OT, another team that tried to lose a game with lots of penalties. God, I'm so sick of penalties. Please don't make me bring it up, Trey. but I mean, like Atlanta, Oakland, Cincinnati, these weren't teams that had defenses that maybe matched up well with what the Ravens do. I don't see Lamar Jackson as a pure type of pocket passer. I think the Browns are going to force him to have to try and complete passes. I don't know that he necessarily has the weapons between him and Gus Edwards, rookie undrafted running back. I think the Browns linebackers, their front seven, match up very well actually, with that type of running attack. And I think that's the way that, if anyone's paying attention to this game, flipping back and forth, I think that's the way it's gonna have to go. It could be very much low scoring, and but I think Cleveland's got to be able to put up some points in order to beat the Ravens, because if the Ravens keep it too low scoring, they have an excellent field goal kicker. This has been like their MO for years. This is the way the Steelers used to play, was with lights out defense where nobody scored, Bruce Arians offenses that didn't score many points, and you send Jeff Reed out there and kick a bunch of field goals and, you know, win here or there with a turnover, pick six or whatever. Ravens aren't very good at turning the ball over either, though. So as long as the Browns protect the football, I really feel like their offense has more dynamic players than the Ravens. And I feel that their defense matches up pretty well. So it's really going to be, you know, an interesting contest.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's going to be a really good game. It's going to be close either way. I think if you kind of hit it on the head, was it going to be a low-scoring game, because it's two really good defenses, you know, but whatever offense kind of goes out there and is able to make plays, that's who's going to go out there and win, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Browns have the chance of doing that.
Yeah, and don't forget, this was a Cleveland Browns team that won at home, beat Baltimore in OT, I believe, if I go back and look at this, with Hugh Jackson still as the coach. So I'm sure that doesn't rest very well with the Ravens, but the Browns already know they've had this team's number once this year. And, I mean, that's something. Mm-hmm. That's still something. So that was, you know, that was only their second win in, like, you know, almost 3 years. It was like their third win in 3 years, and it seemed highly unlikely. And that as well was 12-9. And, you know, again, both teams kind of different here. Some things have changed since back in week 5. And I know a lot of people were bemoaning that as well, because that was right after the Ravens came into Heinz Field on Sunday night and beat the Steelers. Now, speaking of a team that's going to come into Heinz Field this Sunday, the Cincinnati Bengals, also a different looking team. I see their injury report. I've seen the guys that have gone on injured reserve. You started at the beginning of the year with Tyler Eifert, who always seems like the guy can't catch a break, one of their tight ends that are very good when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. But he's been gone for the whole time. You add to that now Andy Dalton, their starting quarterback, A.J. Green, an all-pro wide receiver. Now you're adding, like, Tyler Boyd, the second wide receiver, a guy that, you know, a lot of people are familiar with from the University of Pittsburgh. He was having a breakout year. You have Vontaze Burfict, a guy that, you know, nobody will miss if he doesn't make the game. He's missed 2 days of practice, did not practice, concussion protocol. Probably couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. You don't have to comment. But, you know, he may be out. You had Darquez Dennard, or nickel corner. He's actually been practicing. Drake Kirkpatrick, starting corner, shoulder injury, out for practice for 2 days as well, and very much a question mark for Sunday. Sean Williams, practicing but had a pectoral injury, another starting safety. They're really banged up in the secondary. They're banged up on defense. They're already banged up on offense. That's the reason the line is so big on this. As the Steelers, well, I guess Antonio Brown may have something kind of going on, but for the most part, relatively healthy and getting back James Conner. When you look, let's take a look at the Bengals offense first. It's Joe Mixon, and I believe we talked about this before. Joe Mixon, and now it's Jeff Driskel, who's a little bit more mobile than an Andy Dalton would be. But is there anything really that this is so tough to say, because I know a lot of people are down maybe on how the Steelers have operated in some games, especially as of late, and you don't want to talk too down about an opponent, but there isn't anything that jumps off the paper that that screams that the Bengals have like a legitimate shot in this game, unlike the game we were just talking about, the Ravens and Browns?
No, not really. Nothing too crazy jumps out to where it's like, oh, this is a major problem, especially with all the injuries that they're facing. You know, they lost a lot of their great players, you know. So if we go out there and just kind of handle business, you know, everything will fall into place for us. I definitely feel like that's the case. You know, they still got John Ross, you know, and he's definitely a deep ball threat, you know. So we got to make sure we keep a lid on everything, you know, don't give up any big plays or anything down the field, and just kind of, you know, stop that rushing attack that they try and come out and establish, and then hold it down, because the offense is definitely going to go out there and score points. So all we got to do is make sure that they don't score any.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, I'm looking at all these names. I mean, we're going to jump over the defense in a second, but some other guys that have been, injured reserve this year. Malik Jefferson was a linebacker that they had drafted. Carl Lawson, a second-year player, tore his ACL earlier on. Tyler Croft, the tight end. Even Preston Brown was a linebacker that they had, you know, did they sign or trade for him? He came over from the Bills, I believe. And, I mean, it's just like this is like a disaster year when it comes to injuries for the Cincinnati Bengals. And I was talking about like a breakout, and this has kind of forced them to get John Ross kind of going because he hadn't really done anything. He scored 7 touchdowns, though, so far this year, as did Boyd. Boyd had 76 catches. He's a 1,000-yard receiver. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. Jeff Driskel, maybe not the strongest quarterback, but still kind of respectable. He's still playing in the pros. Got a few starts under his belt now. Had kind of a rough go at it to start, but I mean he's faced the Browns twice. He's only passed for over 200 yards once, and that was against the Broncos, a game in which they lost. He was the full starter in that game. The first game against the Browns, he was not. That's the one that Dalton got hurt in. The Chargers, he played against. He's still throwing for a few touchdowns. He had 2 in the game last week. One was kind of a garbage time type of deal. Much better passer rating, 123.4, believe it or not, kind of protecting the ball. Gets sacked a handful of times, which you might imagine from a guy that's more inexperienced, but still something that you need to watch out for. You still don't want to take anything too lightly, and one of the Steelers' biggest problems of the season has just been protecting the football, creating the splash plays on the other side of the offense. You mentioned Ross. That was about the one big bright spot that I saw on the offense. The offensive line maybe not as strong either. Some gaping holes there. So I look for the Steelers to get down the business. I look for them to be angry, maybe make a statement, because it's kind of it's almost like they have to do something. I know there's not a bowl selection committee here, but I kind of see this as one of those games where you kind of want to tell everyone, hey, all right, we took care of this. We handled this with no questions, and we're a playoff caliber team. Should the Browns end up doing their job? Could you see a similar statement from the Steelers Sunday?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we need to go out there and do. We absolutely need to, you know, worry about what we can control. You know, my dad used to always tell me, you know, don't stress over things that you can't really control, you know. So we can't control what happens, you know, over there in Baltimore with the Browns and the Ravens. But, you know, of course, we hope and pray, you know, what happens is that the Browns go out there and win. But what we got to do is go out there and beat the Bengals. And it's something that, you know, we could do with ease. But, you know, we still have to be on our P's and Q's, you know, and understand what our role is, you know, for this game plan this week, and just to stay on course and make sure we win, so that way if the Browns do win, you know, we in the playoffs and we can really show people what we can do.
Now jumping to the other side of the ball, Bengals have one Pro Bowler, Geno Atkins, well deserved as usual. He's a perennial Pro Bowler. Banged up, like I said, in the secondary, banged up as far as those linebackers are concerned. But we'll see who ends up playing on Sunday. And one guy that stood out to me, of course, following Ohio State football, is Sam Hubbard's been getting an awful lot of opportunities, kind of like kind of reminds me almost like a TJ Watt coming off the edge, a defensive end there. He's been coming on as of late. There's some other guys on the Bengals defense that you would want to keep an eye on, except for that Burfict guy. We're just hoping he doesn't play at all, because if he's on the field, you got to keep an eye on him even when the ball is not in play.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, they also got my guy, Jesse Bates, another safety.
I forgot about Jesse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I trained with him for pro day, you know, so I got kind of close with him, I guess you could say. So, you know, he's definitely a ball hog back there. But, you know, he's not too much of, you know, their defense really isn't too much of a thing to worry about, you know, especially with all their injuries and, you know, the people that they don't have there, you know. And with their, of course, with Atkins down there, you know, causing havoc, you know, but he's in the middle of the field, you know, so you can kind of get away from him on most plays. You know, you can double team him or do whatever it is to kind of make him not as much of a problem during the game. So especially if we're able to do that, we really don't have too much to worry about.
Yeah, I forgot about Jesse Bates. In fact, I believe he had a pick last week against the Browns, and that was somebody that was on everyone's radar here during the draft process. It was someone, you know, Steelers obviously were looking for players in the secondary, like yourself, obviously too. So he was definitely one of the names that were up there, and clearly, it just, you know, escaped my mind. But I think the Steelers offense, with or without Antonio Brown. I think there's a lot of matchup problems regardless. Juju Smith-Schuster just got the team MVP. And a lot of people are upset about that. They're like, hey, Ben got snubbed for the MVP. I think Ben isn't in the running for that award. I think he's kind of like, you know, when you talk about like these Steelers and retired players and stuff, like Mean Joe Green is Mr. Steeler. He's the guy above anyone and everyone. He's like on a Mount Rushmore. Well, the current team, Ben is kind of that guy. So he's not going to be the MVP. And I think Juju more than deserving, obviously, because, you know, they could give it to Ben every year. And then really, what is it, you know? So let everybody kind of pass the trophy around, I guess, or that mantle. But I think the Steelers will be A-okay with that. I like the five wide receiver looks. I don't know that we'll see as much of that or need to see as much of that with the way the Bengals defense is structured, because we were talking about, you know, really attacking the Patriots, really attacking that New Orleans Saints defense. I don't think the Bengals are structured in such the same way. I think we'll see James Conner return. I don't know if James Conner gets the lion's share carries. I think there might be a little dash, like a pinch. If we were cooking here and we're on a cooking show, throw a little pinch of Jalen Samuels out there, maybe 10 snaps or something like that, just to spell Connor, since it's been like about a month since he's been on the field, and just kind of get his sea legs going. See, we came right back to it. Isn't that great?
Life always comes full circle, man.
The spaceship, got to move forward, but sometimes it goes back in a circle. You left something at home, got to go back and get it. So
yeah.
How do you see the Steelers offense maybe operating this week?
I definitely feel like we should come out there and run the ball. Whether it's, you know, James Conner or Jason, I definitely feel like our offensive line can control the line of scrimmage. And, you know, if we're able to do that during the game, it's really easy for our offense to move the ball up and down the field, you know, because they're able to move the whole defensive line down the field, you know. So I feel like we just go out there, establish the run, and then, of course, that opens up play action. And always we can go back to the spread like we've been doing. You know, it's really hard to stop that because we have so many threats. And then you got, you know, like you said, one of the great quarterbacks, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback out there making all the decisions, throwing it to, you know, all of these different threats. So there's a multitude of ways that we can go out there and beat them, I feel like. So we just kind of got to go out there and do it.
Yeah, got to take care of business. For fans who've been following the Steelers for more than a minute, this is kind of heartening to a few different situations which have happened in some previous years. If some of you remember back, there was like almost a couple of years back-to-back here. Back in, I think it was 2013, the Steelers go 8-8, and there had to be like, I don't know, 8-9 different situations that all had to go down like dominoes. If any one of them didn't happen, the Steelers don't make the playoffs. And I mean, 8-8, deservedly so, right? So you get down to the Steelers end up winning out. You find all these other scenarios. I believe the Ravens, who have lost now 3 or 4 week 17, final week of the year, games in a row now, 3 for sure, I think all to the Bengals over the last few years. And so it's definitely a possibility on their end. And they've happened at Baltimore too, which is even crazier, against maybe teams that were less talented than the Cleveland Browns team coming in. So you're looking at other teams, and this isn't something new. There's teams doing this around the league. There are so many teams that could be in, so many teams that could have a bye or not have a bye or be out of the playoffs and sitting at home for sure. One of those situations that happened and occurred was in 2014. It was the then San Diego Chargers playing the Kansas City Chiefs, and Andy Reid and company, they had everything locked up, and they decided to sit Alex Smith at the time. I'm trying to think who their running back was, but they had Nile Davis, I believe, in there as the backup running back. They played a bunch of backups, sat 8 players or something that were starters, and everybody was so mad about that because the way the schedule's set up, it's supposed to be so teams can't do that anymore. And it's like, oh, we really need the Chiefs to beat the Chargers in order to make it to the postseason. Guess what? The Chiefs came out, and they just punched the Chargers in the jaw. It was the Steelers played at 1 o'clock. So we're watching these games. You know, they're the 4:15, 4:20, 4:25 kickoffs. Gets all the way down to a kicker for the Chiefs, makes it, and they win. And this is, like I said, Chase Daniels, the quarterback. And this isn't supposed to be happening. The Chargers are supposed to be a playoff team, and everything's sliding for them. And I believe some scenario where the kicker had to kick it again or something like that, and he misses. And then the game goes to OT. The Chargers end up winning. I remember Mike Tomlin having some quote where they asked him his opinion on that game. He said, "I'll leave that between my family and my basement walls," or something like that. Probably screaming like the rest of us. Steelers were out. That's one situation where they were out. Take everyone back to January 3rd, 2016. The 2015 Steelers needed an improbable victory where the 10-5 New York Jets were going to play at home against a 7-8 Buffalo Bills squad. And the Steelers had to go up to Cleveland. And I remember being at Cleveland for this game, cold as usual, mistake on the lake. And the Steelers just hand it to the Browns badly. So you're already matriculating down to the lower levels and everything. And there's almost no cell reception because every single Steelers fan, that was most of who was left in the stadium. A lot of the Browns fans, obviously last game of the year, cold, fed up, left. A few diehards still sitting there regardless. Cool people, say hello, good luck, congratulations. The Steelers on the field didn't know until the fans started cheering in the stands that we saw the results. I think I even had, some of us had streaming video on our smartphones and stuff because those, you know, those were still a thing back then. This wasn't too long ago. And yeah, watched the Buffalo Bills come up with a 22-17 victory with Tyrod Taylor and company overcoming the Jets and sending Ryan Fitzpatrick, who threw three picks in that game, home while the Steelers went to the postseason. And that was just absolutely wild, and you could be looking at something very similar here coming this Sunday. So, you know, you got to put on, like before, you had to put on the Bills cap, you're going to have to put on the Browns cap, and just hope that you have another team kind of, I don't necessarily say well, do your dirty work, but at least, you know, kind of help you out, as odd as that may seem. I just wanted to get your final thoughts on this, Trey. Final game of the year. I'm sure we'll talk to you at least one more time, get some thoughts on the entire season. Well, we're going to talk to you at least one more time because we're going to the playoffs, buddy. But
yeah, definitely.
How nerve-wracking is it to have to watch or you know, pay attention or hope that another team, in addition to yourselves, does something in order to get to that next step?
You know, it is kind of – it's just a different feeling. I don't know if it's nerve-wracking. It's just like a weird sense, you know, because you're rooting for somebody that's not yourself. But, you know, the main thing that you can try and focus on, you know, as a player is to focus on your game. You know, the fact that we got to go out there and we got to play the Bengals and that we have to win, you know, and just outside of that, you know, you can't stress it. You know, the chips fall where they fall. But, of course, you know, you have hope and you hope that, you know, the Browns go out there and win. And, you know, even with the stories that you just told, you know, it sounds like we have some good luck, you know, when it comes to the situations like these kind of going in our favor. So, you know, that kind of gives some hope to the fans and to the people that, you know, something just might pull off, you know, especially if we go out there and beat the Bengals.
Yeah, and just a reminder of that year, that was the year where Le'Veon Bell ends up getting injured and leaving for part of the season. D'Angelo Williams then gets injured as well heading into the postseason. He was never ready for the postseason. That followed up with the Cincinnati Bengals game with all of the craziness with Vontaze Burfict knocking Antonio Brown out, trying to kill Big Ben as well. Big Ben leaving that game for a little bit. All the penalties at the end. Boswell makes field goal. Steelers move on. Then they go and play severely handicapped against the Denver Broncos squad and nearly pull it out there in the divisional round. Just wild things because, I mean, if that doesn't tell you that anything can happen, then certainly anything can and will. So, like I said, Trey, it ain't over till it's over. We're definitely talking to you again, at least for one reason. Hopefully it's a Steelers and a Browns victory on Sunday. Have yourself, hopefully, a happy new year regardless of this weekend's outcome.
Yeah, man, you too. Enjoy the rest of your break. You know, I hope you had a great Christmas. And, you know, this new year is going to be something exciting. And, you know, 2019 is going to be a great year.
You know, I didn't get to ask you about Christmas, man. And I hope it was enjoyable for you as well. I got a little one that just lights up like the Christmas tree that we have when she opens gifts. But what's cool is now she got kid scissors. She's 5 years old. She could open all these Barbie packages by herself. So she doesn't need daddy's help. And that's awesome in my book.
yeah, man. Growing up, you got to love it.
Absolutely. So, folks, thanks for the comments, both negative and positive. Trust me, my my mind has been spinning for the last week, getting it from every end. But I don't work for the Steelers organization, so thank you very much. I just speak my opinion, speak my mind. My name's Joe Kuzma. He speaks most of his mind. His name's Trey Johnson, a cornerback with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We hope you all have a safe, prosperous, happy new year, and we all hope that's because you get to celebrate for some other reasons as well. We always encourage you to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.